Beware, spoiler phobes. You have stumbled upon A Storm of Spoilers, a podcast about HBO's Game of Thrones series in conjunction with the Song of Ice and Fire books by George R.R. Martin. This discussion can expand to include any Game of Thrones relevant books, shows, internet extras, special features, teases, trailers, interviews, rumors, guesses, theories, and general crackpotitude. We're not ruining, we're enriching. After all, chaos isn't a pit, it's a ladder. If you do not wish to be spoiled or are not caught up, please stop now.
The realm. Do you know what the realm is? It's the thousand blades of Aegon's enemies. A story we agree to tell each other over and over till we forget that it's a lie. But what do we have left once we abandon the lie?
Chaos. A gaping pit waiting to swallow us all.
Chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder.
Hello, and welcome to Storm of Spoilers. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and up until yesterday, I hadn't read any books by George R.R. Martin in his Song of Ice and Fire series, but now I've read at least a few paragraphs, and I'm with...
Joanna Robinson, and I've read every book in George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire, including rereading those few paragraphs yesterday.
So, in case you've stumbled across this again because it's in the normal Fighting in the War Room feed, this is the podcast about Game of Thrones spoilers. And because of that, we're going to start off just talking a little bit about, you know, what happened and how we're going to talk about this because, you know, it gives people sometimes a stop if they don't want to. Both A Cast of Kings, your podcast that covers Game of Thrones at GameOfThronesPodcast.com, and Fighting in the War Room at FightingInTheWarRoom.com, both had very separate issues about the rape scene that went down on this Sunday's episode. So I want to make sure that we are serving a very specific need here, and that need doesn't necessarily change just because something shocking happened in the episode. So once again, we will be using everything in our power to talk about television storytelling and Game of Thrones. Joanna is very familiar with the books. I am very familiar with television and have a big mouth. So together, we should be able to pick this apart. I just wanted to preface by saying that while we are talking about the scene that went down and the sexual assault that went down in it, we are talking about fictional characters. And one of the things that we go over in Fighting in the War Room, so I don't really want to cover it here, is this is not like the kind of guilty I feel when I buy a Chris Brown single off iTunes accidentally, where I'm actually supporting something bad that happened. This is... We tried to use fiction to talk about character and people and emotions, and it kind of twinged public consciousness because it is a widely watched show. But it's also a show that you have to subscribe to get in on and has a whole bunch of warnings about the sort of content it's going to have, and it's a post-Red Wedding show, so you already sort of know the kind of things that are possible in this world. I think that it's very good to have these sort of examples of, you know, rape as a story device or our rape culture sort of echoed back to us. I think this is the perfect place to engage as long as we, as people having the discussion and people writing about it on the internet, realize that we're talking to our friends. There's nobody that has a changeable opinion about this that is going to come at you with wanting to talk about like the story or the episode or what you thought about it. I think if we all can just agree that we're all in a safe space and we're talking about the mechanics of this and this didn't happen to real people and the actors laughed about it, which could be good or bad depending on your view of it, all your emotions that you bring to the actual horrible act of rape, we are going to try to sidestep and just talk about the story mechanics, adapting a book to film, feeling powerless, and how these characters sort of interact in the world. Am I leaving anything out that we might bring up, Joanna?
I don't think so. I don't know that I'm 100% in the same place you are.
Okay.
I do think that we can have a really good conversation about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, it makes you feel weird. And I think regardless of whatever level you're engaging at it with, if you stumbled across the show, you don't know what's going on, the scene comes off really weird and disturbing, only because it's also where a dead person is and in a church on that very basic level, and then up sort of the more you know about the show. But then I also think that it's, I don't know. It's a complex plot point that knowing where both these characters were coming from on the TV show and knowing sort of vaguely where they're going in the books, I can see how this was an economy of storytelling and not outside of the realm of possibility of what is possible amongst these characters.
Right, yeah.
So I guess the interesting thing that I saw the internet react to and that I think we should start with because we're about, you know, adapting, is that I sort of think that it is a rape initially in the book, and it sort of sounds like you read it that way too, or at least read that it could be that possibly.
Absolutely. And, you know, I said this on the other podcast, I don't really love getting into the nitty gritty of like what makes a rape and what doesn't make a rape. Mm-hmm. And, but I guess I shouldn't be quite so precious about it and say that, you know, the fact that Cersei says no, pounds his chest, he proceeds anyway. The fact that the chapter is from the rapist's point of view, you know, I just see it as an assault in the book. And as an assault that devolves into more muddied, like, relations between them, but I still find it a really repulsive act in the book, not just because it's incest, not just because there's a dead child there, but because, yeah, of the assault nature. And so I don't see the difference, the quote-unquote difference in the show being as different as some people do, if that makes sense.
No, definitely. And I like the word assault, the way you're using it, too, because in this world, that is probably not defined as rape in the same way that people get sent to the wall for doing that.
Right.
So, like, I'm not talking about real-life definitions of no means no or anything like that. I'm talking about a weird incestuous royal couple that, you know, has been through war and thought they were sacrificing things for each other and have recently learned they've just lost everything. That power struggle might take on some sort of assaultish, violentish thing. And for me, it was very clear, as someone, I sort of, like, last week we talked about, you know, shooting a mystery like a mystery, and just through the language of TV storytelling, the parallel that you brought up on A Cast of Kings between Cersei trying to manipulate Jaime and Tywin sort of manipulating Tommen, for me, was very clear just in the way they shot Cersei's reaction scenes during the Tywin thing, and then how she so specifically was like, kill my brother, I'll kiss you. Oh, maybe I won't kiss you until you kill my brother. And that just seemed like a very straightforward reversal to me. So I don't think it betrayed anything of Jaime's character, and especially knowing, like we do, that this is their last sexual encounter, I think it even gives it more weight.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the thing that I want to talk about even more so than that, I mean, I don't want to get too far into like, well, Cersei was manipulating him, so she was asking for it in any way or made it happen. But the thing that I think would be most interesting for us to talk about is this idea of character assassination or heroes in Game of Thrones, specifically as it relates to what's coming up for Tyrion. Because, not to get off this subject at all, but like...
I mean, I think it's all the same subject. I think we talked about last week that that's the best reason they had for bringing Jaime in so early is just so he could very clearly be on against Cersei and with Tyrion by the time Tyrion has to bring down the House Lannister from the top.
Well, but also what Tyrion is going to do to Shay. Just the idea of show watchers who, as much as they might love the show, still don't have, and I don't mean this in a super condescending way, but still don't have a full grip on what kind of amoral universe we're dealing with.
Right.
Trying to cling on to a hero and George R. R. Martin continuously pulling the rug out. And so trying to cling on to the Jaime arc as a classic redemptive arc and then having the rug pulled out, or trying to cling to Tyrion as a hero. And I'm not, you know, like, him killing Tywin is one thing, and I think it's something that no one is going to get really upset about at Tyrion about. And even as much as we dislike Shay, killing Shay is going to be, especially the way he does it, is going to be very hard to watch if that's what they decide to do in the show. And, you know, so once again, for people, I expect to hear people say, Tyrion would never do that. You know, the character that I know would never do that. As I'm hearing people say today and yesterday, Jamie would never do that. The character that I know would never do that. So I'm just interested to see how this will, it's just going to be further plot points on a trajectory of what George R. R. Martin has been creating.
So, I mean, do you think that we've, really come that far from America embracing the anti-hero, nay, half a year ago, to now we, you know, are impossible, it's impossible to think that we're going to have to just root for the least bad character? I guess the question
are you talking about Walter White?
Well, I mean, did we need, or Walter White, or, you know, to some degree, maybe even still Don Draper, we haven't really figured that out yet, because we haven't ended yet, but like... In a show where the Red Wedding has already happened and, you know, did the simple thing of Joffrey being poisoned, did that really make people think that this was going to be the kind of show that had justice?
Well, I think it's not just about justice, it's about rooting for someone. That's what I keep hearing over and over again. And... you know, there were all these pieces after season one of how are we going to watch this show if we can't root for a Ned Stark anymore? And then people latch on to a Tyrion, or they latch on to a Jaime, or they latch on to an Arya, and I think that's a mistake, or latch on to Dany, and I think that's a mistake. And I think what's being presented, I am not, I think George R. R. Martin has lost the thread a little bit later on in his book series, so I'm not like a book purist defender of it, but I think what he's done is unconventional and interesting, and I think it's going to be much harder for an HBO audience. And once again, I don't mean that as condescending. I just mean the mediums are so different, book and television. It's going to be harder for an HBO audience to glide along with that than it is for an audience who've been absorbed in the world of the books.
Yeah,
I don't know if I'm saying anything of substance here. These are just thoughts that I'm having.
I guess it makes sense, but to me it's like the show's already broadcasting, especially in this episode. So we have Tywin talk to Tommen about what makes a good king, and the examples that he gives are the examples for our, you know, kings of note. You have the, you know, wisdom king that is supposedly Jon Snow realizing the Mance Rayder plot is, you know, important to kill the people at Craster's Keep, and I'm not sure why that's important, but that's definitely the reason that he brings it up then, is so we could see what a wisdom king looks like. We have Daenerys, who doesn't know the difference between, you know, winning a battle and ruling, as, you know, her story is going to show out. We have Arya, sort of as, like, the last remnant of House Stark, who's even gets told by the Hound, like, how many Starks need to be beheaded before you realize that, like, being nice isn't what, you know, like, power in the world is about. And then we have our religious king, which is Stannis, thinking that, you know, it's so much about burning leeches and he needs Davos to tell him that, you know, he actually needs gold to get feet on the ground. So it seems like the show is telling you, like, here are all these fools racing to the top of the pile. And I don't know if you're buying into something besides that, what you've been latching onto outside of, like, big moments, like thinking that, you know, using dragging fire to blow up a ship means that somebody made the right decision in that battle.
Okay, first of all, I love that this is how you watch the show, Dave.
Thank you.
I'm serious. Like, for you to make those connections, I think is such an interesting and fun and literary way to watch the show. So I'm glad that I get to talk to you about this. But... I agree with you that it shouldn't come as a surprise to viewers, but it's still going to, because even when, you know, even when people think they understand, and even when book readers think they understand, it's easy to get lulled into traditional story arcs, right? And so you think you know the outcome of what you're watching with Jamie, because you've seen it a million times before. And it's just hard to keep in your mind this concept. And George R. R. Martin is sweating. He's trying so hard to constantly knock you off your guard, you know? And so it's like, I hear you. But I think that with your wiki foreknowledge and my book foreknowledge is what is helping us understand the universe better than, because we've seen the full, where this is going so far.
Well, how much more of do they need to see of where it's going to get the idea? Like, everybody you were rooting for in season one is nowhere near being able to usurp any part of their soul, let alone, you know, get any actual power back if they're alive.
No, I mean, I'm with you. Like, get used to disappointment. Like, if you think this has a happy ending, you haven't been paying attention. Like, all of this stuff, I agree. I don't want to be too hard on people who only spend 10 weeks out of the year on a show and get sucked into it and get lulled into a false sense of understanding how heroes work. Do you know?
Yes. Here's the thing. If I sound combative, it's not against you or anybody.
No, I know.
But it's like, I don't think we're talking to those people, you and me, right now on this particular podcast. And I don't think those people are fully engaging with the level of quality that this show and these books are bringing to you. Like, what they want is they want an American Idol where there are recognizable tropes. There's a hero. There's a guy, you know, coming from nothing. They get to vote, so they feel like they have some sort of thing in it. And there gets to be, you know, a story and an arc and a blah. But, like, those things are comfort food. You don't learn anything. You come home and you put on Keeping Up with the Kardashians so you don't have to think. Game of Thrones is not that, and they're not spending millions of dollars to shoot it all over the world, you know, so you could just see some boobs and some dragons every once in a while. And I think that the more we could disabuse people through gentle talking to them about what they actually saw in the show, the more we could, you know, bring people around to the great things about this story, which is, you know, how it shows an entire world and how people interact within that world and how, you know, it doesn't have heroes because we don't have real heroes.
And I completely agree with you, except that I think you're just a little bit more romantic about the way in which you can convince people. And to a certain extent, I think you're tilting at windmills in terms of, I feel like I've tried this with Breaking Bad, and there are always just going to be people who are going to watch a show in a certain way. And I don't think it's the most rewarding or interesting way to watch a show, but how can you really tell them they're doing it wrong? The only time you can tell them they're doing it wrong is when they accuse the show of being wrong, I think. And then I'm like, well, no, that's because you were expecting something else. And it's not that the show betrayed you, it's that you were expecting something else. But if someone chooses to watch the show for Dragonfire and boobs and whatever, you know, that's their prerogative. I wish they would read the books instead and then talk to me about it. You know, that's how I enjoy watching the show. Yeah. But who are we to say, right?
Well, maybe, yes, we're getting away from Game of Thrones. We might revisit this later, but I think it's interesting. I think what's great about the kind of conversations that we have is that we're setting a realistic bar that we could still be shocked when it's cleared proficiently. I feel like other people are just setting a bar for what they want to feel at the end of the day, and that's an unfair thing to do to a whole bunch of people who are just trying to make a show with a whole bunch of other constraints. But I think we could get back to that later, because I want to talk some more about some book things that came in around the edges this season. Specifically, I'm glad that we're returning to the Seven Gods and the Old Religion, because I don't know, I guess we might have some more face trees coming up in Brandland, and I'd like to understand a little bit more of that. And it looks like Stannis is sort of dealing with both being on the Lord of Light's side, but having to have some more realist Davos take, which is going to bring the bank into play, which I know is boring to some people, but I love the Iron Bank stuff, because I think that's a direct parallel to our real world and how things work. So it would be I'm going to be very interested to see how people react to that. Is that what they're doing? Are they sort of retouching on things that they brought up in previous seasons just because we're about to dive into them? Or was that just something that that very nice Nan needed to say before the Hound can punch him in the face?
No, I think they absolutely are. And I think, you know, whereas the books constantly talk about this sort of stuff in terms of the rich history and all that sort of stuff, the show needs to bring it up in as an organic way as possible, to remind the audiences so they're not completely lost when the Iron Bank comes into play this season, which they're going to. You know, we saw Braavos in a preview. We know about some casting stuff with the Braavosi. So they're really shuffling the books, which is great because I really think they're going to trim the fat on Feast for Crows, which is just going to be fantastic. But yeah, I think it's gentle reminders. I made a joke, 2 weeks ago about taking a shot every time you hear them mention the Iron Bank of Braavos. And I loved that Lady Olenna and Tywin scene where they mentioned it and mentioned it again this week. And then I agree with you. I hadn't even thought about it as concretely as you have, but this concept of bringing up the gods again in a very real way, to really hold the hand of a viewer who hasn't got that book resource.
Right, because once Stannis meets with Jon Snow on the Wall, we have to understand what they fear from each other, and Melisandre, right, and all that fun stuff. Although by then we'll also have like 2 dozen more characters we have to worry about.
Maybe. I want to talk about that too.
Oh, let's talk about it now. Go into it.
Well, you had asked me off air sort of when Euron Greyjoy is going to show up. Like, when Balon Greyjoy is going to bite it, and when we're going to get into all of that. And I've been trying to figure it out, because they haven't cast the Greyjoy uncles. So I think they're going to save Balon's death until the end, which is way out of order for the books. Like, he should be dead already. But I think that, I don't think they're even going to cast one of them. I think they're going to bring, Yara is going to be, like, stand in for it. And I'm not sure I understand that decision because she hasn't proven to be a very dynamic character. But that's my only guess as to why she's been treated the way she's been treated in the book, in the show. I think they're going to sub her in for her.
So wait, is Yara going to kill Balon at the end of this season is what you're saying?
No. No, I just mean, like, the power struggle for the throne, that she's going to throw her hat in as a viable heir.
Right, so, like, but they're just going to get rid of the, you know, mysterious circumstances of Euron showing up right after Balon fell off a bridge or whatever he does?
No, I think that's still going to, I think Euron's going to show up maybe the beginning of next season, if Balon dies right at the end of this season.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, I mean, I'll be happy because I'll be introduced to things the way in the new status quo, but that's throwing me. Bringing Balon so far forward while bringing Stannis to the Wall when they are is all sort of... Some stuff is either getting compressed or drawn out, and I don't understand it. Do you understand it better than I do?
I think that they're trying to plot certain things that the central point of interest for this season is going to be trying to stage the battle at Castle Black as like a second Blackwater, right?
Right.
And Tyrion's trial and the, you know, Oberyn and Mountain sort of conflict. So they're significantly drawing certain things out, and you're right, compressing other things. And some of it makes sense to me and some of it doesn't. But I think they felt the need to have certain peaks in the season. So if you peak with Joffrey, you peak with what happens with Oberyn, and you peak with Blackwater, you know, Balon's a footnote, right? And right. So the Kingsmoot stuff is going to be the stuff of next season.
I'm surprised. I'm actually
reading of it.
I'm surprised going back that they actually made Balon a leech. I thought, like, if there was one leech you could just, you know, replace with something else for one of the many other deaths that Stannis could possibly be behind mysteriously. But they didn't. I guess we're going to see that happen.
Good. And you know, that's why I think they changed the joust a bit at the wedding, was to remind us that Balon is still out there.
Right, and have Tywin remind Oberyn this episode, I believe, when he asks him to sit on the small council, that the Greyjoys are still in rebellion, so he needs all the houses under his thumb or protection,
right,
or whatever. It's not going to work out anyway. We don't have to think too much about it. So
it's not going to work out for old Tywin, unfortunately.
Before we move on from where Stannis is and talk about some marine developments and maybe talk about some emails that we got, have we already just thrown out the map of Westeros and how long it takes to travel from place to place, considering that Gendry what is it, took a ship by King's Landing a few seasons ago when he had no reason to, and now it takes like half a season to get back and forth from Caster's Keep.
Well, one of our, I was wrong about my assessment of what happened in that scene, and one of our, that I mentioned on Cast of Kings, but it, I guess Dollar said, and they were held captive. So it didn't take them that long to get back in Craster's Keep. They were held captive and escaped. And I just sort of blew past that scene while watching it. So,
yeah, I mean, I saw that they were held captive, but I guess I don't know how many days it was. It seems like Sam and Gilly have been at Castle Black long enough that Sam knows he needs to get her out of there. So I guess that's, I don't know. I think if we're going to have Stannis suddenly leap from wherever he is, Dragonstone now or whatever, to the east side of the wall, that they're just going to have to pretend that distance is really short.
Don't you wish that Stannis had just not appeared this season until he, you know, miraculously showed up at the wall?
I don't know if there's anything you could do with him that they've done with him in the show they couldn't have done with him, like, on a ship, and we just don't know where Stannis is. Like, everybody else sort of doesn't know what's up with Stannis. Because I like the stuff with him and Davos, and I like his family. I don't know what's up with Melisandre and his wife, but I'm at least interested enough in that to see how that works out. But, like, it feels weird to just have him spend so much time sitting here trying different magical things and wrestling with his own, I don't know, hubris to be king, when it seems like Davos is very, you know, logic this step to that step. And, you know, Tywin's like, well, there's that girl with the dragons over there, and she's coming for us. It kind of feels like Stannis, this was the first time when he said that he was running out of time that I felt he knew he was running out of time, and I've always felt he's been running out of time.
Yeah, it's not been handled very well, though the Shireen and Davos stuff does go a long way to redeeming, so that when you go to Dragonstone, you're not just like, ugh, we're back at Dragonstone. At least there's the charm of Shireen and Davos, so.
Yeah. Well, should we move on to our Mr. Daenerys Stormborn?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Lead into this, because you actually caught this and I did not.
Oh, yeah, and someone else actually tipped me off, but Hisdar, who is a big character in A Dance of Dragons, the actor, they cast him, the actor who played him was Joel Fry, so people who know what Joel Fry looks like noticed him in the crowd scenes in Meereen, up on the walls of Meereen. So that was just a nice way to, you know, and it's possible that a couple of the other faces that the camera lingered on will become significant later, but that's the only one that I know of. So that was a nice thing to do that shows don't always do, is introduce him now. And it gives me hope that the Meereen stuff is going to be also compressed. You know?
God, yes, that'd be nice.
I know. I think a lot of people were worried that in season 7 we'd still be in Meereen, and I don't think we will be. Because plots run concurrently between A Feast for Crows and Dance of Dragons, I think we'll spend this season and probably only part of next season in Meereen. That's my hope. Though, it seems implausible.
Well, are they going to also put the stops on Tyrion somewhere, and so he could intersect in the correct point, or is he going to get accelerated?
Wouldn't it be great if Tyrion didn't have a lot of that plot, though?
Well, I mean, the fact that there's no, what is it, Penny? Dwarf, the fact that she's gone, not on the series yet, is great. And I would hate to be the casting director that's like, find Peter Dinklage's dwarf acting partner for this season, because that's just a horrible thing to have to try to find.
Someone mentioned that they could, like, retcon her back into the wedding, because I think I said this last week, right? That the actor who was playing Robb Stark in that little tourney had a helmet on. So in theory, that could be Penny if we wanted it to be. But
I mean, I would like that, because okay, so what they did with Dario is making me feel weird now, because what you said should make sense to me, which is that we saw this actor. That means they're going to compress it, because why would they plant him this early on if he's just not going to show up for a whole season? But they've been totally doing that with people. Dario's someone new, Tommen's someone new, which, you know, isn't going to throw a whole bunch of people, but it throws me considering, like, 3 weeks ago he was sitting on Cersei's lap about to be poisoned. Right?
Three weeks ago in the show chronology?
Or, I mean, longer than that, I guess, because it was right at post-Blackwater, but still not that long. It's,
yeah. No, they definitely take liberties and hope that people feel like it serves the plot. And I think that bore out with this other version of Dario.
I mean, I do like him better.
Yeah.
Just because I think he looks more like Dario. The other one the other actor was fine, but now that I know he's not going to be there anymore, looked a little bit too much like her brother in the corner facial features thing. There's a weird, this is my brother thing, and we don't ever want her to get back to Viserys. I forget his name. He's not important.
Viserys, yeah. Well, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. I do think that thus far what we've seen, this new Dario is a better actor, and I think that's going to play out well. For Emilia Clarke going forward. Mm-hmm. I didn't really want her scene partner to be Ed Skrein for a long time. I think from what we've seen, the Jorah stuff is going to happen in the next episode or two, and that's going to be a heartbreak, you know, and then we're already halfway through the season. So then what's next for Dany, you know?
Yeah. I mean, does the Jorah stuff being moved up sort of not make the Varys coin connection if that's going to be a couple episodes further down? If we're already going to be talking about Varys this early on, are they going to loop back again and talk about Varys?
I don't know, man. God.
I miss Varys. Now that we got Littlefinger back, I miss the other side of the actual struggle for the realm.
Littlefinger with his exaggerated new accent. Yeah.
I mean, him, that actor, both as Littlefinger and as Carchetti, is like doing some of the most nuanced but like completely process and uninteresting character pieces like on HBO. Because Carchetti was like ended up sort of filtering out or piffering out of The Wire just because he ran up against the system. And Littlefinger is going to go spend some time in the Vale when we really want him battling for the realm. Or maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm Team Littlefinger. I thought I was Team Varys. I'm talking myself out of it.
No, you have to be Team Varys.
I do like Team Varys. I don't know. It's going to depend. I guess it depends if the Dragon Riders end up liking each other or not.
Right? That's a good point. Yeah.
Anyway, do you want to answer some of these emails?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
What are they?
Okay, let's do one from, oh god, this is the one similarity between A Cast of Kings and our podcast. I'm going to murder all your names. Antoine Schmidt, who says in a lot of words, that includes calling George R. Martin Durder Martin, which I thought was kind of funny, that maybe there won't be a Lady Stoneheart, which we discussed.
Yes.
Last episode.
Yeah. I would hate that.
Why?
Well, okay, so a lot of people think that the reason that we need to have both Beric Dondarrion and Lady Stoneheart is because Jon Snow is going to get a similar treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I also just, I didn't love Kat when she was alive, but I sort of loved the Lady Stoneheart character. And I could see that she could be cut out, and I could see that, show watchers would object strongly to her being in, because they feel like it is a betrayal, a bit of the rules of the universe. But I would really miss her if she weren't there. So what do you think?
I mean, what he lays out is that maybe, you know, Beric or Brienne could take over the Lady Stoneheart material. And although I like the sound of that, it's hard for me to tell without knowing the endpoint, since already after two episodes, I'm so used to knowing so far ahead to be able to judge the story. It's sort of like what I said with Reek. Once we get there, I'm going to know exactly how I feel. But right now, I feel like it could go either way. Like I feel,
that's fair.
I mean, you could see, you know, Lady Stoneheart becoming this like fan favorite character because she's about, you know, she's the last remnants of the what we remember of being good on this show. but we might be too far gone at that point if what they're doing, like you said earlier, is telling us not to find heroes and whatnot. And then especially when it gets the whole, like, whatever Brienne says to stop being hung scene, then you get, you know, all sorts of weird problems with making those characters the same sort of person.
Well, what I like is that Lady Stoneheart is complicated because she's this, you know, this act of vengeance that we agree with, that it's the same thing that's infecting Arya, but it's, but then it's taken to an extreme that we can't follow because we like Brienne, right? So.
Right. Well, I mean, but are we allowed to like people, I guess, is now the new question for you and I as people watching the show week to week, but knowing what's going to happen.
I think there are some fringe people we're allowed. I mean, do you mean allowed to like because we could lose them, or allowed to like because we shouldn't be rooting for anyone at all ever?
The second one.
You know, I think that there are a few exceptions, and you know, once again, maybe this is me falling prey to exactly what I talked about, but like Pod, how can we not? You know, and Brienne, how can we not? But maybe, you know, what she says to save herself is going to be a big character reversal. Who knows? You know, this is the world we live in. That is unpredictable. That's a good point.
Pod is the only one that I have trouble thinking of, like, a way you could make them. Because already with Brienne, if I'm remembering correctly where we leave her, she's trying to convince Jaime to join her on something that's obviously not true. So we still don't know what's up with Brienne in the last of the books, unless there's more about her in that part that was released on the blog or whatnot.
Right, right. No, I mean, something questionable is going on, but it's still hard to think of her as being, like, transgressively evil.
Oh, that's right? Just because you like her.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, what's it going to take? What is what
How
matters
many
to Brienne?
Stark heads are going to have to roll?
Yeah, that's right.
That's a good point.
All right, and we had a few people email in. I will give you all credit later if you really feel like you need it, saying that there is somebody who knows about Rhaegar and Lyanna, and that's Howland Reed.
Yeah, do you really think they're going to pull Howland Reed into the story? I mean, that's the question.
I could see him do like a Yoda in Return of the Jedi when Jojen brings somebody back. Like, you know, Jon Snow does something and Jojen's like, you need to meet my father. And like Howland Reed's like dying and he says like, you are a Targaryen. Yeah, exactly.
I've been waiting for them to say there is another Targaryen for a really long time. Or there are a couple more Targaryens.
There are a couple more Targaryens.
But, like, really, because, once again, Mira and Jojen Reed have been such problematic characters on the show that I can't even conceive of adding Howland Reed to the mix, you know? But we'll see.
I mean,
in the books, I can see. In the show, I have an issue with it, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he would definitely be, like, a guest starring role for, like, I don't know. By the time we get there, so much more stuff will happen. Like I said, we will have gotten to the point in the series where the initial characters that we cared about, so many of them are gone, and we've started caring about a new group of a dozen characters. Like, by the time we get back to, you know, who's going to actually take over Winterfell and all that, and, you know, I don't even know if there is a Jane Poole replacement yet or what the hell's going to go on with that. So, I feel...
But that's the real question is... Is that what they're going to do, or are Weiss and Benioff going to try to trim as much of that as possible?
It just seems like such good story.
I can't see us spending that much time with Greyjoys. You know, and I don't know, and I can't see them expecting a TV show audience to let go of that many characters. Do you know? So not death-wise, but I mean just like not spending any time with them story-wise.
Is there a way, because we're all talking about people from a similar part of the world, to mash this in with Lady Stoneheart and make some sort of super character?
The other thing that they can do is have Bran have a vision, have that plot line pay off, and maybe Bran can just like figure some shit out with visions and do it that way. You know, why not?
I mean, I would feel less cheap if Bran's vision brought them to Howland Reed than I would if Bran's vision showed them essentially a flashback, which I think we talked about.
Which we already talked about, yeah.
Can't do.
I don't know. It's so interesting, and it's been such an interesting process watching this as an adaptation, even as they were pacing the books, but to watch them scramble now that they're off the map more and more is even more fascinating, in my opinion. The more it distances itself from the source material, the more interesting and thorny this is going to become as we compare and contrast storylines that work. And I thought George R. R. Martin's response to the controversy of this week's episode was so interesting, because he's basically disowning the TV series as being his work of art. Do you know?
Yes. I mean, he's
disowning.
Taking,
disowning is strong, but he's distancing.
He's saying, you know? Don't give me responsibility unless I'm credited as the writer of the episode.
Exactly.
Which is
and
fine.
So he's like, they never discuss this with me, which is amazing to me. I'm not saying that, you know, it's not true. I'm just saying that's incredible that they were like, we're going to depart this much from the source material and not even talk to George R. R. Martin about it. Yeah, if that's true, which why would he lie? Then that's a revelation about this process.
Yes. Interesting. I guess we could also debate whether or not they actually departed from the source material, but that just loops us right back around to the beginning, which seems like a good place to sort of put the brakes on this week.
Sounds like a good idea.
Did we miss anything that is going to bite us in the butt and not come up again for the rest of the forever?
Just that I'm going to be so sad when Oberyn Martell dies.
Oh man,
worse,
but you're going to get
worse than I was in the book.
You're going to get so many great scenes before that happens, though.
That character, that performance, you know, so fantastic. Everyone's going to be so sad. Oh man, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. So, and that's what I'm, you know, you wanted to talk about, as you said, I don't know, what did you call him? Eyepatch Greyjoy. Yeah, you wanted to talk about him specifically. I think that's another opportunity for like a really great, you know, they just need to cast that very well and introduce him very well. And that could be just another dynamic and very interesting character. And help us along through the King's Moot stuff. So,
yeah, and the madness of Cersei and all the wonderful, wonderful inner conflict we have coming up.
Oh, that's just one more thing that I wanted to say, which is that I feel like something I heard a lot around this conversation, you know, the rape conversation that I had forgotten about, which is that people feel very strongly that Cersei has been whitewashed on the show. Mm. And I just, like, specifically the thing that people most bring up is the fact that in the books it's Cersei who orders, you know, the infant bastards to be killed, and in the show she's appalled by it and it's Joffrey who did it. And I don't think that Cersei needs any help looking terrible. Do you know? So I don't think that this makes her a more sympathetic character, and what it did is make Joffrey more monstrous. And George R. R. Martin weighed in on that too. He was like, Joffrey's not this monstrous in the books, which is true. He doesn't like send a bolt through Roz in the book because Roz doesn't exist.
Oh, you mean, but the same place that Arya shoots a bolt into a target? Yeah, because they're the same character. That's okay. We'll get to that later.
But the fact that it's the aging up thing. If you're going to make him older, you have to make him more terrible. Because if he was young and kind of terrible, it's one thing. If he's older, he has to be more terrible.
Well,
is my opinion.
We're talking about the nuance that TV doesn't allow us for, again.
Right. Exactly.
What I think that they're going to use this as a very interesting way of drawing very soft parallels between Joffrey and Arya, and at some point we're going to realize they've been doing it, and then we're going to have to reckon as viewers how we felt about Joffrey and how we feel about Arya. And I'm looking forward to that moment, but I think it's something they've very distinctly been building on, where every time, you know, a young Lannister sociopath learns something, Arya also learns something, and neither of them, I think, learn the correct way to deal with things, but they're both sort of being driven into a sociopathic direction. Whether Arya comes out of her, you know, blindness, multi-facedness, having learned an actual lesson or not, we don't know. But I do think that we're, you know, we have two baby sociopaths and they're very, very similar up until who knows when.
Well, and is that like a nature versus nurture argument?
I mean, that wouldn't that be bringing modern day views of rape into a scene that may not have included it? Joanna, can't we just assume that there are different ways to make a good ruler and we don't know what they are yet?
I'm really looking forward to there being another episode of Game of Thrones for us all to talk about.
Yeah, me too. Where could we find the rest of your stuff on the internet so we could have more Joanna Robinson if we don't get more Game of Thrones?
You can find me on vanityfair.com. You can find me on Twitter at JoeWroteThis. You can follow A Cast of Kings. I'm doing a very special episode of A Cast of Kings this weekend, which I'm really excited about. So do check us out over there.
Ooh, that's a mystery even to me. My name's Dave Gonzalez. You could spell my first name D-A-7-E because I'm eccentric that way. That's also my Twitter handle. I write about superhero movie news and rumors at latino-review.com and co-host Fighting in the War Room, which you could find at fightinginthewarroom.com, which you probably already found because you found this podcast. Subscribe to our feed. Lots of goodness. And we'll be back talking to you about a storm of spoilers next week. No, no.
I cannot give you back your homes or restore your dead to life, but perhaps I can give you justice in the name of our king. perhaps I can give you justice.